All right, welcome back. More of the Connor Happer Show on 1620 The Zone, just past 11 o'clock. And we're joined now by Jacob Padilla from Hill Varsity. Jacob, it looked like you made your way out to the Creighton game last night. How are you?
Yeah, I did. Rare off night where I didn't have anywhere else to be, so took advantage of it and was just glad that we actually had a game that I was able to go to.
I know. Hey, Creighton can pose last night as the magical elixir for basketball pain. At least if you're around Nebraska basketball a lot.
Yeah. Well, so I brought Jacob Bigelow with me, and I believe he was 0-for-5 for the home team winning. Ooh. For local Division I schools so far this season. 0-for-2 for Nebraska, 0-for-2 for Creighton, and then went to an Omaha game with me as well, and they lost that one. So if Creighton had lost that one, I was going to ban Jacob from any local basketball games, but they got it done, so he's safe.
Did you guys record your podcast, like, at the game, just do a live, like, reaction show of the on the Nebraska Shootaround podcast?
Nah, we recorded that last night, a little after. Got to cool down from watching the game and watched back some of the Nebraska film, unfortunately, to get myself ready for that. So,
well, we'll start with them then, and I often get around to comparing them to Creighton, so it might weave its way back to that. But I mean, there have been some good things, just some inconsistently good things for Nebraska basketball over the last kind of few games here. The Trey McGowan's thing is a really big deal. I mean, if he's back in full now, which maybe we could expect, or maybe it takes a couple more games, what does that mean for them?
Yeah, I mean, just the impact was, like, immediately obvious.
Yep.
When you watch them with him on the court versus not, and, I mean, the plus-minus backs that up. They actually won his minutes in a 7-point loss. So that was he looks different out there compared to everybody else they have on the perimeter, is the best way to say it. Defensively, he can actually move his feet and stay in front of people, which turns out is kind of important in basketball. And he made a few hustle plays, deflection, steal, drew a foul, got the tie up. He drew a foul on the defensive glass, his feet in the right spot. There's just so many little things that he does. Just with his athleticism and aggressiveness on defense. I mean, he got down and slapped the floor. I'm not sure anybody else on the roster cares enough about defense at this point to actually do that. So we'll see offensively kind of what he does. He wasn't particularly involved in that game, spent most of the time in the corner outside of one stretch where he was the point guard with Webster and Verge both off the floor. But I think they were easing him back in a little bit. So we'll see kind of what he does offensively. He does give another option that can drive a little bit. But defensively is where they missed him the most and is where the biggest difference is going to be. And they have shot the ball better recently. You mentioned some good things. I mean, you go back the last 7 games, starting with that Kennesaw State game to end the non-conference season. They're shooting basically 40% from 3. So I kind of thought early in the season, like, if they could just get some shots to start to fall from these guys they brought in specifically to be shooters, that then things will kind of start to click and they'll get on a roll here and have a chance to win some games. They're shooting the ball now and they're still not winning. And it goes down to the little things. And that's kind of what I wrote about for my Wednesday column at Hill Varsity, just based off of kind of the comments that Kobe Webster made on another station that you're familiar with.
Well, yes, I was looking into those a little bit yesterday. Defensively for them, it just feels like it honestly, and I'm surprised by this because even with Trey last night, I'm surprised because they don't have a ton of, like, length and athleticism, but when they really dig in, they could be kind of disruptive. I tweeted this out during the game the other night. But then other times it's just totally disengaged, and it seems like it's exclusively based off of whether or not they're making shots. Like, that just can't be a thing.
Yeah, that's part of it. And there are also times where, I mean, when you play a kind of gamble-heavy system, there are times it works and it looks great, and there are other times where you gamble and you're out of position and you get beat. So that's part of it too. It's not necessarily, I don't know how often they've sat down and like guarded man to man for 30 seconds and forced a shot clock violation or a bad shot or something against another good team. Generally, like a lot of their defense's success is based on like double teams and gambles and that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Because like man to man, you look at the roster and Trey and probably Derek are the only guys that I would say are above average individual defenders. And then everybody else is kind of varying degrees of problematic, depending on like a guy like Verge is capable of putting on ball pressure. And we saw that down the stretch at the Indiana game. He had some really nice steals, got some good ball pressure. And he and Trey down the stretch, they're actually kind of were really effective in the backcourt, forcing turnovers and bad possessions. They just couldn't score on the other end to take advantage of it. But he has so many lapses, and he's one of those gamble and then get beat type of guys as well. So they really do have to succeed with this team. And their limitations, it really has to be a attention to detail, locked in every possession, full effort type of deal, because you're going to be facing teams that are more athletic and more talented and often has more size than you every night out. You're not going to win one-on-one. It's got to be as a team. And we see stretches where they're locked in together, and then there's stretches where a guy turns and watches as the ball goes up and lets a guy run by him for a triple putback. Or there's a play where a guy doesn't rotate and leaves a wide open shooter for a good look, or another guy just again just doesn't put in the effort to get in front of somebody, just turns and then it just kind of battles with them out of position. Like, there are just so many of those little things that's what cost them the Illinois game. I mean, that game was tied and then just completely fell apart, and it was all those little things. And kind of same thing for Indiana. They were locked in a little bit better defensively. Again, they gave themselves chances, but they didn't hit shots down the stretch, and they made bad decisions. And so that's kind of what we keep seeing from Nebraska during this stretch of competitive play against good teams, is they just can't finish. They can't make the plays when the pressure's on, either on one end or the other or both.
How many guys do they need, or does a team need, that do the little stuff, the little things, the way, you know, Derek Walker and Trey McGowan's are able to do it for them? It just feels like they need more of that. And you can have, like, you know, you don't want to have guys going off script or, you know, rogue all the time. But, you know, that has to be the majority of your team, right?
Yeah, for sure. To varying degrees, too. And it depends on how talented talent you have and how good, like, if you've got a guy that's averaging 20 a game, you can make up for that a little bit more if maybe he isn't the guy that's hitting the deck for every loose ball. But when it's a team like this with Nebraska, where the margin for error is so small because of kind of the lack of talent, you look at this team and there are some pieces, but ultimately they don't really fit together. There are too many guys that have similar strengths and weaknesses, and those kind of magnify when you've got guys that don't necessarily cover for each other, that they struggle in the same area. And that's kind of what we're seeing now. So because of that, they're at a disadvantage almost every time that they take the floor against a Big Ten team. So to overcome that, it's got to be all the time to make the right decisions, to be in the right place. You're going to have to win with attention to detail and effort and all those little things. And as kind of Kobe said in those, in that radio interview, like, at this point, this team hasn't really shown that they care enough to really buy in and do that, because that stuff is hard.
Yeah.
Like, getting down and really defending for 30 seconds every single possession, that's hard. And battling with a bigger guy on the glass, that's hard. But that's what you have to do to win basketball games.
There's also, I mean, there's the roles piece of it, too. And this is where we can weave back in Creighton a little bit. It's not like they're, you know, they're young as well. But one of the things that they have done a really good job of this year, and we'll use a guy like Arthur Kaluma as an example, they haven't had to depend on him for too much. I mean, he's been in the starting lineup, but then you have some games where it really flashes. Last night it did for a little bit. It was also kind of bad for a spurt last night as well. But they're not totally dependent on what a young guy like him does on a nightly basis. it just feels like Nebraska is kind of devoid of that piece of it too. Guys that, you know, they can really line up, and, you know, obviously they don't have very many dependable guys, and that's kind of where it starts.
Yeah. I think even a guy like Derek Walker, who's been the most consistent player on the team this season, last two games, foul trouble and kind of the defensive attention limiting his touches have kind of resulted in back-to-back tough games for him. So that's the one guy that you've had that's been consistent in that area, and he's kind of been taken away. So yeah, it really, and you got like Tominaga and Wiltshire and Webster, and all these guys are kind of, you need at least two of them going in any given game to kind of create space for guys like Verge and McGowan's. And that hasn't always been the case. And I think probably Lat Mayen has been maybe the biggest problem, yeah, because it's been mostly valleys for him, and there have been very few peaks, if any, so far this season. And this was a guy that you were counting on as kind of a veteran coming back, part of that returning core that made this team a little different than the past, where you had McGowan's and Mann and Walker all coming back, plus Webster kind of coming back that had played a lot last year. So that's your returning core. You need those guys to perform. And Trey's been hurt, and Lat's really struggled. So that's kind of they are in that spot where you never know what you're going to get on any given night. I mean, Bryce has been a little bit more consistent recently. He's done a little bit better, but even he hasn't. It hasn't been enough to kind of carry the team forward and give him the shot to win every single night.
Yeah. Jacob Adil is with us. Hey, you were at the Creighton game last night. They're starting to kind of find some consistency. There's peaks and valleys because it's a young team. We're halfway through now. Where would you kind of put this team as if you were kind of tearing out the Big East or maybe even project the last, you know, 10, 15 games of the season here?
Well, it's kind of hard to say that considering how little they've gotten to play recently.
That's true, yeah.
That's like, yeah, after that game, you're like, oh, yeah, they're feeling great. I think they probably are a mid-tier team. Even last night, like, I think Ryan Nemhard's situation is starting. Obviously, he wasn't totally healthy in that game, but you kind of go back and look through his game logs, and I've mentioned this, like, even early on when he was playing really well. I thought they were relying on him for too much ball handling, because you look at that starting five, and there's not a lot of creation ability. Like, Alex O'Connell is an off-ball guard. He's not a guy that's going to create off the bounce. Arthur Kaluma struggles when he tries to create off the bounce against perimeter players. Ryan Hawkins, again, isn't a guy that you're going to ask to create for a bunch of other guys. So it really is Nemhard is the only guy in that starting lineup that can handle and break defenses down. And I think teams are starting to recognize that and take advantage of that, and it's led to some struggles. So there are some just inherent kind of lineup concerns. And then you go to the bench and you've got freshmen as your only other ball handlers. And it was good to see Trey Alexander play the way he did last night. They needed that badly with the way that Nemhard was playing. And if those guys continue to progress, I think you feel really good about this team and the versatility that that they can have when they are going a little bit smaller with those guys. But I don't know that you can rely on them to be – I don't think they're going to be up there with Villanova. And we'll see this Xavier game at home, obviously. They competed with those guys at their place already this year and had a chance to win that game. They've already beat Marquette, who has been on a tear since then. So, I mean, it's kind of hard at this point to sort out a Big East hierarchy, because some of the, like a team like UConn that you thought would be right up there near the top, they're 3-2 right now. Obviously, they've had some stoppages and had a lot of injuries to the key guys. Seton Hall is 2-4 right now. You expected them to be one of the better teams. So I think Creighton's got a chance to finish firmly in that top half of the league. And you do that, you have a chance to make the tournament. But at this point, I don't think you can call anything a given with this team, just based on what we've seen and how young they are.
Yeah, they're getting to that point, but it's still relatively thin. I think it's pretty well exemplified, and I think this every game Number one, how big of a deal Hawkins is for them, and just the things that he does. Like when he comes off the floor, it's immediately noticeable. But then also Kalkbrenner, and you know, they haven't had that kind of rim protection really. I mean, that's a defensive force that I don't know that Creighton's used to really having.
No. I mean, there have been very few guys in program history that I think have been as effective a rim protector as him. And it's kind of the point now where not only the blocks numbers, but just the intimidation and the challenging shots. He's just so good at being in position and doing it without fouling. I mean, he's averaging 1.3 fouls and 2.9 blocks a game. Like, that's hard to do.
Yeah.
So it just kind of points to his technique and his understanding of where to be when and all those types of things. And it really does kind of transform this team. This team is so very different than any of the Creighton teams that we've had, that we've seen have success recently. Just the youth, the 3-point struggles, but the ability to score inside the arc. Although they're shooting better in conference, which is good to see. But
the turnovers
and then the rim protector on the backside, plus kind of a post presence that Kalkbrenner can be at times. So he absolutely is huge, and it's been noticeable when he's. You mentioned Hawkins off the court. There are times where Crane just hasn't been able to function with Kalkbrenner off the bench.
Yeah.
And Mac's solution was that, well, you're going 35 minutes, or in case of the multi-overtime game, 45 minutes this night. And credit to Kalkbrenner for continuing to perform at that high minutes load, because you look back and centers just don't play much more than 25 minutes a game for Mac. Recently we're starting to see them experiment a little bit more with kind of a smaller lineup with Hawkins and Kaluma out there as the front court pieces, because Keyshawn Fizel has really struggled in his last few times out, and I think realize they need to find a better solution than just putting Kalkbrenner back in the bench or back in every single time they struggle with him out.
Jacob Adela, Hale Varsity, is with us. We'll go outside here, but it's also still local, and want to check in with Chucky Hepburn. What I mean, your level of surprise cannot be very high that he is currently the point guard on a top caliber team. They're 15-2. Wisconsin is now he's got some weapons around him, which is nice, but that plan seems to be going on schedule right now.
Yeah, I was not surprised to see Chucky win that starting job from day one. Obviously, I don't think any of us here that watched him from middle school all the way through high school were. I am surprised that Wisconsin is as good as they are. Yeah. I did not see this coming. I thought Johnny Davis would have a breakout year. I did not see top five in the country in scoring type of breakout. And you look at it individually, like Tyler Wall is having a really good season, but it's not like they're playing super great individually. And that's kind of the hang up I've had with Wisconsin in recent years, is I have not liked the personnel. Like, you look at the individual players and their offensive ability and efficiency and all those types of things, and it doesn't really seem like it would add up to be a really good team, but somehow it just does click, and they just defend well enough and find a way to get the buckets they need to carve out some of these big wins. And that's kind of like Chucky's. He's not having a great year statistically, not shooting the ball particularly well, and they're not asking a lot of
exactly him. That's it. Yeah, they don't need him to do, even though he's the point guard, they don't have to lean on him to do everything.
No, just go out and make a few big plays defensively, move the ball, kind of make sure guys are in the right spots, and then they kind of share the ball throughout. You look, Johnny Davis 2.5 assists, Brad Davison 2, Tyler Wall 1.8, like everybody in their starting five averages over an assist a game. So it's just really, they move the ball, they share it as a team, and Chucky's out there just playing his role. And that's kind of one of the impressive things about Chucky, is just his kind of feel for the game and understanding of how to play and what his team needs. He's capable of filling a variety of roles.
Yeah, and then I guess making a three-quarter court shot, whenever that opportunity rolls around.
That's always nice.
Jacob Adela of Hale Varsity. All right, man. I will let you go. Appreciate the chat as always. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Sounds good.
Jacob Padilla. Good stuff from him. You can find his work at Hale Varsity. Also doing a podcast, a couple different things over there. Nebraska shoot around, talking a little high school as well. Didn't even get around to that, asking him about that today, recapping that every week with Damon. So there you go. We'll take a quick timeout. We'll come back. Want to talk some NFL quarterbacks during the show today because, you know, when we get bored, we go back to NFL quarterbacks.
Yeah.
That's about how it goes. So plenty of things still to come. Michael Bruntz at 12:30. Odd news at the end of the hour. More up next in the Connor Happer Show on 1620 The Zone.